Okay, well, thank you. This is one David Hammer was supposed to give, and I found out this morning I would give it. So if you know David, I probably cannot be as lively and as share some of the words that he would hear, but I know we've talked a lot about this. This is an extension of the talk that I gave, that the driving force of a lot of things we do is water. And so hydrology is a very important and very integrative process. So as we take a look at the goals, what we're trying to do in this presentation, briefly review the developmental history of soil survey and soil genesis, move from the pedon-based taxonomic approach that we have out there to the hydropedologic landscape-based interpretive approach, and set the tone for a balance of new course and teaching from there. So with that in mind, as we take a look, we always like to talk about testable hypotheses. I think many of us in here as pedologists or having a strong pedology background would say that soils, landscapes, and their associated biota co-evolve through geologic time. And in other words, there's a connection there with everything. Everything's connected to everything else that's out there with that. With that in mind, one quote that I've gone back to many times over the years, many of you may know or remember Marlon Klein here, that the success of a teacher depends upon their ability to create in the minds of the students an integrated model of the subject as a whole. Again, that's one that both David and I hold very close in the sense that if we can be out in the field, interact with that, and yes, we can use a lot of the technology we have now that will help it substantiate that, but that is, I know something that's driven me over the years, some of you that know me, that this quote from Marlon, I thought, has always been first and foremost in my mind as I interact with that. Some other perspectives you can have is the belief systems are the spectacles through which one interprets the world. That's one that have. One that I received from a geologist friend, a young geologist learning about plate tectonics, I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't believed it. Okay, there. And there's probably some truth to that then. And then one from a river runs through it. If many of you have seen that, you wouldn't have seen the fish and all that foam if you hadn't first thought that it would be there. Okay, so gives you an idea of the perspectives. It's very important to have that experience out there. So when Alice meets Red Queen, and where have you come from and where are you going? Well, if we take a look at the relevance of this to us is that we are concerned about the proclivity to teach at computers and do away with the small field classes. And I would even say even the larger field classes. From there. And again, the situation and the change in organizational structure, it's not just one entity, it's many entities as well as our profession and such, is that we've probably truly gotten away from some of the collaborative work that we should be doing. And again, that gets us out in the field, gets us a better aspect of inventorying the soil resource as well as providing interpretations from there. Now, and as we center things and we try to take this approach and integrate things for the students, many of us use, of course, and being at the University of Missouri, having had Han Jenny there, you've got to cover the factors of soil formation. And even if you're not at Missouri, it's a great way to organize thoughts, allow that for the students. Likewise, as we take Simonson's classic paper from 1957, which arrays the four general soil forming processes of gains and losses, whether they be vertical, whether they be lateral. We take a look at translocations, transformations, and the interactions, the true gains and losses in the net, very important from there. Again, another one that you saw this in the last presentation, but Horton and other workers taking a look at the hydrologic cycle. And again, as we come back to that, the most important interface in the biosphere is right there at the soil surface and its stability. Will it be able to infiltrate water? Will it be able to support vegetation? Is it moving, et cetera, from there? So another important concept. Likewise, you can take Crompton's richness of weathering versus intensity of weathering there. And that as you take that, the richness of weathering, the proportions of minerals, the inherited characteristics that you have versus the intensity of leaching. In other words, the environmental factors that's going to reorganize weather, re-precipitate, relocate components from there. So what better way to bring those together than to go to the field, interact, again, get down from there. And so they're very important to integrate this in a more holistic model in the earth sciences. Essentially, if we do that, some of the first things, this really mimics some of the expressions I get from students there, that it's more complex than I thought. And I put that photograph up there not just because of the photograph, but it's really the quote that once you cover some of these things in lecture or a video or something, then you go out to the field and you get there and the students start thinking, God, this isn't just cut and dried, but there's a lot of things to go on there. We've used this, and I would say David has used it quite a bit in teaching fourth graders in streams, the integrative concept. I've used it a lot with the general public in on-site wastewater, but some of the same things where we get people out there hands-on, and again, the tacit knowledge there to get teaching experiences, the outreach experiences, etc. from there. We try to integrate that into the landscape, which is a population of landforms welded geomorphically by the through flow of water in the landscape, the nutrients, the energy, the fluxes developed under similar manifestations of the factors and the processes of soil formation. Likewise, we parcel out the landform and, of course, the individual landscape feature as it's described on the basis of its shape, location with respect to other landforms, internal attributes, etc. from there, and its depositional or erosional nature of it. Likewise, we look at a different scale, soil structure, of course the subsequent aggregation, and also how things are oriented, whether it's roots, whether it's clay films, whatever. So again, what better way than hands-on from there. Again, relating the hydrology, this is from West County, St. Louis, with stormwater, where they've had some really strong problems and downward water movement in Lus over a paleosol developed from limestone. And in this cut, and we're standing, pictures being taken where there's been quite a bit of incision and erosion because of urban development and sprawl. Everybody knows water flows and thinks water flows down slope, but what controls it? And by looking at the water flow on top and being stopped at the paleosol and moving laterally is very important. Again, trying to give students an idea out in the field of the watershed, a landscape with a common flow net is very important, and we take a look at scaling features from there. Likewise, very important to take the soil profile here as we and we get students out, and we also have them take the monolith so they understand that, because when you take a monolith and have to work with it, you understand the points that are fragile and those that are hard to get through, as well as the ped faces, the morphological properties then from there. So as we look at this then, and each soil through the class, we try to integrate the four concepts or conceptual models we've talked about, whether it's from from Yenny through Crompton there. We challenge the students to document the processes that are taking place, the specific processes, linking all the soils in transects to land, the genesis and water movement. And remember what we saw in one transect and relate this to subsequent transects or landforms, landscapes that we go from there. What we're trying to do is build the conceptual integration of the skills and the interpretability from there. Others, we then use slides because we have to bring in things like this that we don't have in Missouri, where we have ash and lust on top of then ablation till, which is quite a bit looser than the dense basal till that you see here. And the fact that water is being held up, you know, there's much action going on there in that sense. And the note the water perched over the dense basal till. We have to show that because we don't, of course, have that in Missouri, but it's important to go out and having seen something in Missouri and then say, all right, here's somewhat similar thing that's happening here. And as I pointed out earlier in my talk, bringing in together the profiles in the landscape, where do they sit, where is water moving, where is it converging, where is it diverging then from there, and subsequent development of the landform as well as the soil. And then relate to that if we've had studies there. We take a lot of our students out to where we've had plots or studies and talk about the biomass and other things. So we try to relate, go on other scales as we take a look at some of these classic slides that I'm sure many of you have used, but show these, but go out and show what we have in our own backyard. So as we look at this, our approach to this integrates the four models, the conceptual models we've talked about. We build upon the soil profile to the transect, to the watersheds, to develop testable hypothesis of water movement in time and space. So with that in mind,
we have time for maybe one question, if you got one. Otherwise, thank your speaker again. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.